outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a tie, can't just see, hoping up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right, in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Thursday, May the 14th, 2026, year of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles, and you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth Broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you're all doing well, all ye Gentiles of goodwill, as we say often on this program. We don't wish our enemies well, folks, not when they have sworn themselves thousands of years before any of us so much as took our first breath or our first step to our utter destruction and ruination. We wish them nothing but failure and defeat, and that all of the seeds that they plant, that the harvest of these seeds of violence and evil are bitter fruits. Anyway, folks, we should, if all of the stars and planets line up properly, we should be joined by Stas again this weekend. We were both rather pleased with last weekend's program that we put together. It was good to have him back on the program. And we're going to be continuing the discussion both today and this weekend that was had on the last program with Stas. Now, those of you who... Okay, first of all, we'll get some house cleaning taken care of. As we say often here, folks, we are the most pro-Semitic, pro-Semite podcast and website in the universe. Now, I know some of you out there listening to this are saying, "What in the world are you saying? You do nothing except..." talk about the Jews and what horrible specimens of subhumanity that they are. Yes, folks, that's exactly right. In fact, there's no better way to be pro-Semitic than to warn your fellow man how horrible the Jews are, okay? There's no better pro-Semitism that exists out there than to speak up for those who are the victims of Jewish religious hatred, religious violence. We love the Christians, folks. We love the Muslims. We thank God especially for the Muslims and for Islam, because if it weren't for them, none of us would be alive today, folks. Make no mistake about it. If Islam had not appeared when it did, the Jews would have... well, they would have just been much further along in their plans for destroying the rest of us than they are now. Make no mistake about that, folks. Now, I have to say this because I get plenty of people who send me lots of anti-Islamic comments. And, you know, folks, you would think after 25 years since 9/11 that people would begin to put the pieces of this puzzle together and figure out that the only ones who benefit from bashing the Muslims and bashing Islam are the Jews. Okay. Every time somebody says something bad about Islam and about the Muslims, all that it does is further empowers the Jews with what they are trying to do, which is, in its basic sense, folks, just the complete incineration of the planet. And another issue, folks, that pops up every once in a while and comments about the website and the program, and it's this issue known as hate. You know, we are accused of spreading hate, of being hateful. No, that's not true at all, folks. Not true at all. In fact, we have decided to name this little network here. Yes, it's the Ugly Truth broadcast, but it's part of the Nothing But Love Network, right? The Nothing But Love Network. Every soldier who goes out and kills the enemy does so because he loves his country. He loves his family members. He loves his friends, neighbors. Every father who punishes his child does it because he loves that child, okay? And the approach that we take here, folks, which really is the same approach that any soldier would take, is that we love our own people so much. We love the Gentiles. We love the Christians of the world. We love the Muslims of the world. We love everybody of the world, folks, except for those people who seek to destroy all of us. And when you are truly bursting at the seams with this love, love for your family, love for your friends, love for your country, your community, for humanity in general, you can't have that love without at the same time, folks, having these very strong emotions, very strong instincts and inclinations to prevent bad things from happening to them. Now, we have to say this, folks, because unfortunately we have been conditioned, brainwashed, whatever word we want to use, into thinking, into using that word hate. You know, Tucker Carlson uses it a lot, and he says, you know, I'm not allowed to hate anyone because I'm a follower of Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ only preached love. He didn't preach hate. Well, folks, as we mentioned on a recent program, there's a section of the Gospels where Jesus says, unless a man hates his father and his mother and his brother and his sister and his wife and children, unless he hates all of them for my sake, he is not worthy to be called my disciple. Now, of course, we know that Jesus wasn't saying that you have to hate someone in order to be a loyal follower of Jesus Christ. What he was saying, in effect, is you can't serve two masters, okay? It's either going to be me or it's going to be the other guy. And if it's not going to be me, then forget it. Just go about your business, do something else. I don't need you in this army. And this is the approach that we take, folks. If Jesus said it, then that's good enough for us. And given the amount of time and energy that he put into warning the human race about the dangers that the Jews pose to all living things on this planet, if Jesus said it, then it's good enough for us. And there's no better way to honor and revere Jesus than to pick up the baton and to continue that race, that mission, whatever we want to call it, that he did. If he said that the Jews are a brood of vipers, not a very nice snake at all, folks. You don't want to be around any vipers. If they bite you, you're going to die. When he referred to them as children of their father, the devil, he wasn't saying these things so that we would love these people, okay? Like any good father or an older brother who warns someone younger, hey, stay away from this dangerous thing here, okay? This thing is not your friend. It's not going to make your life better. Stay away from it. That's what we were supposed to, that's the lesson we were supposed to have learned, folks. Now, I also get comments from people saying, boy, you really do spend a lot of time talking about Jesus. Yes, folks, we do here because it's a conversation that needs to take place. No different than people who, like here in the United States, talk about George Washington a lot, or John Locke, or Thomas Jefferson, or John Adams, or whatever, within a political context of saying, you know, this is what these guys did, this is what they wrote, this is what they said, this is the philosophy that drove this thing that they brought about, known as the American War for Independence, that created this new nation. And so you have people who will quote them and other founding fathers, quote unquote, in order to get their bearings as to what the country was supposed to be and why and how it has gotten so far off from the map that was left for us. And in that note, on that note, folks, yes, we talk about Jesus Christ a lot because he was the founding father of this civilization that is rooted in the preservation and the salvation of the Gentiles. Okay. For the simple reason that we have been stalked and hunted ever since Cain lured Abel out into the fields and bashed his head in with a rock. Okay. This is an important thing to keep in mind, folks, because there's a lot of unnecessary noise pollution out there within what we call the blabosphere. People with their podcasts, with their websites, whatever, and they throw a lot of irrelevant and untrue, often, pointless points into discussions, whether you know they're Khazar Jews, they're Talmudic Jews, they're Zionist Jews, they're this kind of Jew, they're that kind of Jew. And in the final analysis, folks, none of it really matters. When you view what's going on today and the way that the Jews are behaving all over the world, whether it's in Israel with their overt violence and their overt terrorism, or whether it's in the countries of the West where they control the media and the politics and everything else, they are behaving exactly like their great-great-great-grandparents did thousands of years ago. You look at how they are dealing with Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens, the things that they're saying about them, how they are they're haters and they are anti-Semites and they hate Jews and they should be this and they should be that, meaning they should be deplatformed, they should be whatever. And make no mistake about it, folks, I know everybody listening to this program fully understands it. If the Jews get their way, we will not be able to have conversations like this without penalties coming with it. And it may very well be, folks, that the President of the United States will be forced to sign legislation that outlaws this kind of conversation and discussion that you hear on this program and on others. If he could be forced into launching a war that he was absolutely against and still is, how hard is it going to be to threaten him in the same way that they threatened nuclear incineration of Iran a year ago next month in order to force him into bombing those nuclear facilities? Which would be easier, folks? Okay, his political base of support, all of his political capital is hemorrhaging by the minute. And it's going to reveal itself in the midterm elections here in just a couple of months. So, so the point is, folks, don't let yourselves get caught up in a lot of these hairy discussions about what kind of Jews. You know, when Jesus left his warnings, he didn't warn about the Talmudic Jews or the Khazar Jews or the Zionist Jews or the secular Jews or the whatever, okay? He used very plain language referring to them as a synagogue of Satan. Notice, folks, that wasn't a mosque of Satan. You would think that Jesus, being the Son of God, that he would have the foresight to see if there was going to be this person named Muhammad in the future who was going to be, supposed, as we're told by the Jews, such a threat to the world, but he didn't. He only warned us about the Jews. He didn't warn us about the Romans. He didn't warn, all he warned us about were the Jews and those false prophets who are working in the service of the Jews. So this is an important thing to keep in mind, folks. When you see Netanyahu in one of these interviews, or any of these other people, Alan Dershowitz, all of them, the whole gang, you're looking at an absolute repeat of what existed thousands of years ago. Thousands of years ago. It's the same group of people, folks. Anyway, as I said, we're going to continue on with the topic that featured last week with Stas, and it's that always cheerful topic, folks, of nuclear war. Those of you who heard the program will recall that Stas and I spent quite a bit of time talking about this rather important statement that was made by a former CIA officer, John Kiriakou, who informed everyone that, according to his sources, inside sources, the thing that finally forced President Trump's hand to attack Iran back in June of 2025 was Israel threatening to use nuclear weapons. Now, the amazing thing, folks, the amazing thing is that, to the best of my knowledge, and I certainly hope that I'm wrong, this fact has not made its way into any discussions in any kind of substantive way, meaning Scott Ritter hasn't mentioned it, John Mearsheimer hasn't mentioned it, Phil Giraldi hasn't mentioned it, Tucker Carlson has, in a roundabout way, I mean, he talks about nuclear war a lot, he talks about Israeli nukes. But this particular revelation by John Kiriakou hasn't, again, to the best of my knowledge, folks, I could be wrong and I hope I am, hasn't gotten any mention except for on this program. And it's a really, really important thing, folks. And the reason why it's important is because we really have reached the end of the road here with regards to Judea and Judea's plans for destroying not just Rome, but the entire world. Okay, as we point out often on this program, you're dealing with a group of people here who really, really do believe that they are morally obliged to set the world on fire as a burnt offering to this violent, satanic deity that they worship named Yahweh. Now, we're going to start off this discussion today, folks, with a couple of quotes, a couple of important quotes that all of us need to take very seriously. The first comes from the Old Testament, folks, the Torah in the language of the Jews, the Torah. And it comes from the book of Leviticus. And it reads as follows. The priest is to place his hand on the head of the sin offering and slaughter it. Then the priest is to take some of the blood with his finger and put it on the horns of the altar and pour out the rest of the blood at the base of the altar. They shall remove all the fat, and then the priest shall burn the bull, the ram, or the goat on the altar as an aroma pleasing to the Lord. And in this way, the priest will make atonement for the people of Israel, and their sins will be forgiven. Next quote. This comes from Ariel Sharon, the war criminal and former prime minister, the butcher of Beirut, is how he is known. Before he died and went to hell, he did this interview back in, I believe it was 1980, with this Israeli journalist. What was his name? Amos Oz, I believe it was. Anyway, Saron says as follows, tell me, do the evil men of this world have a bad time? They hunt and catch whatever they feel like eating. They don't suffer from indigestion and are not punished by heaven. I want Israel to join that club. Maybe the world will then at last begin to fear us instead of feeling sorry. Maybe they will start to tremble, to fear our madness instead of admiring our nobility. Let them tremble. Let them call us a mad state. Let them understand that we are a savage country, dangerous to our surroundings, not normal, that we might go wild, that we might start World War III just like that, or that we might one day go crazy and burn all the oil fields in the Middle East. Personally, I don't want to be any better than Harry Truman, who snuffed out 500,000 Japanese with 2 fine bombs. Okay, so folks, the reason that we have started off our discussion today with those 2 quotes, the first from the Jews' book, the Torah, the Old Testament, where the main thing, this is the main thing in Judaism whereby they get right with their God. Whereas Christians and Muslims, they go out and they do good acts in order to atone for their sins. They confess their sins and then make sure not to do them again. The Jews get their hands on an animal, an innocent, defenseless animal, and they cut its throat, splatter its blood all over the altar, chop it up and burn it until there's nothing left. So they haven't been able to do this now, folks, for 2,000 years since the temple was destroyed. That's the only place where they are permitted to carry out this sacrifice, this burnt offering, this holocaust. And it has formed, it has had a direct impact, folks, on a lot of how their brains function, and particularly with regards to not just the wars in the Middle East that have taken place, but the nuclear war which they are planning for all of us. We have read sections of the Old Testament from the Jewish prophets, quote-unquote, Obadiah, Zechariah, all of them. One of the threads that runs through almost all of those books, folks, is that there's this future day where the children of Israel, also sometimes called the descendants of Jacob, are going to set the world on fire. And there's nothing in any of these prophecies that indicates that the God that the Jews worship is going to be unhappy with this. In fact, the way that it's painted is that their God demands this be done, and if it isn't done, he is going to be grievously offended. Okay. Now, the reason we're having this conversation, folks, is because nobody else is, unfortunately. And let's see, my sheep are running down the hill. No, they're not. They're right there. I got to keep an eye on them. They're crazy these days, and sometimes they take off for the wild blue yonder, and I got to go run and get them. Anyway, because no one else is, folks, irrespective of where you go, to the best of my knowledge, you're not going to hear the kinds of conversations dealing with this topic that you hear on this humble little informational endeavor. They talk about the war. They talk about the Zionists, but they won't touch the intellectual, the spiritual DNA, the spiritual energy that's driving all of this, folks, which is the drive to incinerate, create this aroma that is pleasing in the nostrils of this violent God which the Jews worship. This conversation is not taking place, folks, and it's very disturbing the manner in which that it's not taking place. Okay, now what is she running down there about? Sorry, folks. The trials and travails of living on a sheep ranch. Anyway, so what brings up this conversation, folks, is that there was a very interesting op-ed that was written and published just this week, I believe. And it was written by Robert Kagan, the husband of Victoria Nuland, okay, a notorious neocon, not just a neocon, folks, an operative working directly for Benjamin Netanyahu, okay? When Robert Kagan or any of these other individuals, Jennifer Rubin, Bill Kristol, Elliot Cohen, all of the guys and gals who got us involved in the war in Iraq and who have been demanding the incineration of Iran now for decades, anytime they write something or say something, they are doing so because Netanyahu has in some way instructed them to do it. Make no mistake about that, folks. And so Robert Kagan wrote this piece that did get some discussion on some of the pro-Palestine anti-war websites, and it is called Checkmate in Iran. Yes, it appears on The Atlantic, which is the stomping grounds for creatures such as David Froom. Let's see, the one guy, what's his name? Sorry, folks, I'm drawing a blank here. One of the editors there, Jeffrey Goldberg. Yeah, it is Neocon Incorporated, folks. It's War Incorporated, meaning especially War for Israel. So Robert Kagan writes this piece entitled Checkmate in Iran, and he goes through this very detailed prognosis of what we're facing now and what's coming. What he's saying is that America's done for, that Iran has checkmated America, and that the best days of America now are far behind us, that there's a new world order that has emerged as a result of this. Iran is more powerful, and Iran is really running the show by closing off the Straits of Hormuz. Now, folks, certain critical questions need to be asked especially since we can accept without any reservation that Robert Kagan is working for Benjamin Netanyahu, which he is. Why would Kagan write a piece like this, Checkmate in Iran? Was that what it was called? Sorry, folks. Drawing a blank here, and it is Checkmate in Iran. Why would he write a piece like this if Donald Trump were doing everything that Netanyahu wants him to do with regards to this war? And why not sing the praises of this war like they did with Iraq and other ventures that were done in order to make the Jews happy? Why aren't they singing the praises of this? Unfortunately, folks, the best that I can tell, the common commentary on this article, again, within the pro-Palestine, anti-Zionist, anti-war websites, is one of celebration that this neocon, Robert Kagan, is saying that America is finished and that Iran has won. And they're not asking these very important questions. Why would Netanyahu want Robert Kagan to write something like this? Well, folks, once again, we will be the first and probably the only outlet on the web to say this, okay? They're missing the point, just like they missed the point back when Netanyahu held up the cartoon bomb thing at the UN back in 2012. Everybody was laughing about it, snickering about it, ridiculing Netanyahu, and they did not understand that what Netanyahu was doing was threatening the world with nuclear incineration if the countries of the world, and especially the Western countries led by the United States, didn't get busy with destroying Iran. They're doing it again, folks. They're doing it again. They're not looking at the mechanics of why Robert Kagan would write a piece like this. Now, I'm not going to read the piece, folks, because it's long. I invite you to do that yourselves. But basically what he says is, if this situation doesn't turn around very quickly, America's finished. We're finished as a military power, as an economic power. Iran, Russia, and China are going to rush in and fill the void. And he talks about how America's weaponry is depleted, that we can't keep bombing Iran in the conventional fashion in which we have been. And what he's doing, folks, without saying it, is he's saying, we don't have any other choice. The president doesn't have any other choice. He has to use nuclear weapons because we're running out of munitions. And as long as Iran continues to function as an entity, as a political entity, then we're done. It's finished. It's over. My sheep are running towards the road, folks. I'm going to go down there and scare them back. I shall be right back. Sorry about that, folks. Just a temporary delay there. So as I said, Robert Kagan writing this piece that has caught the attention of a lot of the anti-Zionist, anti-war, pro-Palestine elements, they're missing the point, folks. They're missing the backstory involved in all of this, which is that, in essence, what Kagan is saying, and folks, make no mistake about it, 435 members of the House and Senate, their staffers are going to be reading this, and they will be sitting down with their congressman, congresswoman, whatever, and saying, look, we have to worry about this. We've got elections coming in a few months, and if this Iran thing drags on like this, we're finished. At least the Republicans are going to say that. So what Netanyahu is in effect doing here, folks, is choreographing to the President of the United States once again the necessity of using nuclear weapons. Now, is that explicitly said? No, it isn't, just like it was not explicitly said when Netanyahu was holding up that bomb cartoon. But make no mistake about the fact that that is exactly the message that Robert Kagan and therefore Benjamin Netanyahu is trying to get across to the president. Now, here's the real disturbing thing about it. I mean, it's all disturbing, obviously, folks. But what we're dealing with here is not a geopolitical thing. What I mean by that is that even if the Iranians came up with a deal with Trump, we'll open the Straits of Hormuz. We will have no nuclear enrichment. We will cease funding Hezbollah and Hamas and other resistance groups. Even if they did that, folks, even if the Iranians did that, Netanyahu and the Jews would still be pushing for Iran's nuclear incineration. Let me repeat this, okay? Even if Iran completely folded, said we won't have any nuclear material in the country at all, we will cease funding these resistance groups, Hamas, Hezbollah, whatever. We're willing to recognize Israel. Even if Iran did this, Netanyahu and Israel would still demand Iran's nuclear incineration. Now, why, folks? Well, again, we have to understand the peculiar and the dangerous energies that drive the Jewish brain. We started off this discussion by quoting from the Jews' holy book, where it says that the smell of this burning flesh is pleasing in the nostrils of this God that they worship. Interestingly enough, I ran into an article that that I had published on the website a while ago, and it was written by this horrible warmongering Jew who was talking about what the Americans did to Japan at the end of World War II, how the Americans firebombed Tokyo and then ultimately, you know, brought the whole thing to an end with the dropping of the two nuclear weapons. He said something very interesting in this. He said, some of the American bombers, meaning the personnel who were flying the bombers, reported that they could smell burning human flesh thousands of feet in the air over Japan. Now, again, folks, why is this such a problem? Because we're dealing with a group of people here who have, I mean, they never had any connection with reality. I mean, reality to them has always been what they needed it to be at any given moment in order to further their interests, okay? But now it's gotten to this point where they're in the latter stages of this delusion, this derangement that has afflicted them from the very moment that they crawled out of the earth and began their rampage on humanity. When you try to have this conversation with folks, with other people, and tell them, look, the Jews are planning to burn up the entire world. The Gentile mind simply cannot grasp this, folks. And the reason that we have a hard time grasping this is we put ourselves in the shoes of these people, and we say, well, why would they want to do that? And this is the problem. It's like the sheep trying to understand what drives the wolf to behave the way that he does. It's two completely different natures, two completely different brains. So the Gentile does not understand that the final solution in the mind of Netanyahu and the rest of them, folks, again, it doesn't matter if they're on the right or on the left. You know, I was at the grocery store today, and I was looking at this jar of these pickled vegetables. It's called giardiniera, something like that. It's actually an Italian thing. And it's got, let's see, it's got cucumbers, it's got peppers, onions, cauliflower, and they're all sitting in this brine. And when you take them out and you eat them, folks, they all taste exactly the same. Now, they may have certain differences in appearance, maybe different textures, okay, but they all have the same flavor because they've all been sitting in the same pickling spice. And it's like that when we're dealing with the Jews, folks, whether they're on the right, on the left, whether they are religious, whether they are secular, they have all been pickled on this battery acid brine that has made them hate creation, hate reality, hate the rest of us. And so when we try to have this conversation with people about this group of insane arsonists who plan to set all of us on fire, people have a hard time understanding that. But here's the thing, folks. If it is one lesson that has been learned, especially since October 7th, it's that the Jewish brain has no understanding of this thing known as cause and effect. Okay, go to any Jewish website, any Israeli website, ever since October the 7th, and the number one topic is quote-unquote anti-Semitism and Jew hatred. And you have all of these experts who weigh in on it. They say, we just don't understand. You know, ever since October 7th, when we started mass murdering hundreds of thousands of people, innocent men, women, and children, all of a sudden now there's this spike in anti-Semitism. Folks, they're not pretending. They really don't understand because they do not possess the same instincts that the Gentile has, where we operate based upon the understanding of the laws of cause and effect. You know, we don't go and rob a bank, because if we do, we'll go to jail. You don't smash your thumb with a hammer, because if you do, it will hurt, cause and effect. Jewish brain has no conception of this at all. And the proof of this is all of the wailing, whining, and complaining, the rending of robes, the gnashing of teeth, and everything else since October 7th about the rise in quote-unquote anti-Semitism. So folks, why would the Jews be willing to set the world on fire? That would mean that they're going to be set on fire too. No. No. That's a cause and effect mental exercise that they are incapable of executing. Not only that, folks, but the very same religious scriptures that are telling them to set the world on fire also tell them that they will be safe, that the fires will not reach them. So why are we having this conversation, folks? Well, it's generally understood and accepted that the world is a really horrible place right now. And people are starting to get this itching in the back of their head, telling them that maybe things are going to get considerably worse in the very near future. And they are, folks. Okay? And one of the reasons why this is likely to happen is because the conversations that should be taking place, where people should be made aware of what the real undercurrents of all of this are, these conversations aren't happening. You have conversations about how Iran is winning. We have conversations about how Trump is a traitor, how he loves war, how his whole anti-war platform was just an act, without looking at the secondary and tertiary things that are headed our way. I was looking through some older articles that we published here. There's one that we publish this guy's stuff all the time as a good template in understanding just how depraved and deranged the Jewish brain is. He's a rabbi. He's the brother of Meir Kahana. And he wrote this piece titled, "The State of Israel Will Use All of the Weapons at Our Disposal in Destroying Our Enemies." So he says something here that we all need to take close attention to. He says, "Let me tell you what will happen if the world deprives the state of Israel with the means of defending itself. Israel will live forever because God Almighty will not let its destruction happen, even though it's happened several times before, folks. Again, like I said, we're dealing with people here who live in complete detachment from reality. He continues, "However, let us suppose Israel runs out of the means of defending itself and the many millions of our anti-Semite enemies take advantage of the situation and come to tear Israel apart. What will we do? Will we go out into the streets holding white flags? Will we gather together at the Wailing Wall and prepare to die? No, all Jews in Israel are in fact soldiers, and we all share the same Samson syndrome, that if there will not be an Israel, there will not be a planet Earth. The state of Israel will never come to the point of Samson, because when push comes to shove, we will use all the weapons at our disposal to kill our enemies and therefore the second nation in the world after the U.S. to use atomic weapons is very likely to be Israel. Now, folks, some people say, okay, that's just one crazy person, opining about this. But if you actually sit down and read what the Jews write, folks, on a daily basis, they all are saying the same thing, that there is this giant global bonfire that is headed our way, and nobody knows that it's coming except for them. So where do we go from here, folks, now that I have effectively frightened everybody out of their wits? Well, as we say often, folks, we want to, with every step forward, we want to make sure that we understand exactly where we are, who we are, who our enemies are, what lies in front of us. And what this means, folks, is coming to certain unpleasant, uncomfortable conclusions about things. Not the least of which is that all of the things that we should have been told a long time ago, we weren't. The people that we trusted to educate us and to fill our brains with the information that we needed, they didn't give it to us, not with regards to this topic. As I said earlier in the program, the Jews today and everything that they're doing are no different than the Jews of yesteryear who were screaming for Jesus' crucifixion and murder. No different, folks. The only difference now is that they have spent the last 2,000 years amassing their political support and the ability to literally, like I said, incinerate the planet as a burnt offering to the violent, demonic deity that they worship. Now, as bad as all of this sounds, folks, it's not completely hopeless, okay? And the more we understand this and the more that we show that there's something about us that's worth saving, okay? And I've used as the example what happened on the day that Israel attacked the USS Liberty. And, you know, these guys, they just refused to give up the ship. They didn't have any way of fighting back. The only thing that they could do was prevent the ship from sinking. And that ship, if it had sunk, folks, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now, because what the Jews were planning on that day was sinking that ship as the necessary prerequisite to setting the world on fire with nuclear weapons. And so, you know, this handful of guys who did their damnedest, no pun intended, to keep the ship from sinking, we were all rewarded with a miracle that day, folks. And those miracles are waiting to reemerge, if we are willing to do the things necessary, and that includes, folks, that includes understanding without any fairy tales, without any myths. Even if these fairy tales and myths, folks, they come from people that we trusted before. Okay, if anybody is talking about if they use the term Judeo-Christianity, forget it. Nothing that they say should be believed or considered. There's no such thing. It says in that same book of Revelations that all of these insane Christians are always talking about on their radio programs. It says in it, of the synagogue of Satan, who are Jews and who are liars, I will make them come and worship before thy feet, and they will know that I have loved thee. That comes from the third chapter of that same book of Revelations. And we know this, folks. We know that in the end, they are going to be destroyed. But it's going to take a miracle, and that miracle is only going to materialize if we demonstrate to this great investor that it's an investment worth making. Anyway, folks, we went around the world quite a bit on this discussion today. I hope it made sense. We're going to call it quits here. Went a little bit longer than we had wanted to, as I said earlier in the program. If all the stars and planets align in just the right way, Stas will be here with us this weekend to continue this conversation. And educate yourselves, folks. Educate yourselves with the right stuff. Okay? No junk food in our brains. We have to purge our systems of all trace of that Judaic poison that was injected into us like the COVID vaccine. It was designed to destroy us, folks. Destroy the liberating message of Jesus Christ and to turn the world over to the tyranny of the Torah and all of its religious terrorism. So that's it for today, folks. On this Thursday, May the 14th, yes, 14th, 2026 edition of the Ugly Truth Broadcast, I thank you for your time. I thank you for your consideration. Pray for a miracle, work for a miracle, stay safe, stay strong, and keep the faith.